This is Pod Populi.
Podcast for the people.
Welcome back to Palm Beach County Perspective. This is Robert Weinroth. Thank you for coming back. And we're going to continue on our theme from the last few episodes. It is election time. It's election time nationwide. It's election time here in Florida. And what we've been doing over the last few episodes is reminding our voters of a few dates that are coming up. And as I always say, if you're listening to this now in January or February of 2025, it already happened. And you know who got elected and you know what has happened as far as the national elections and the local elections. But if you are hearing this before November 5th, I'm hoping that you will take what you hear here and here. Yeah, well, that's two different hears. And go forward with the information that you've learned and make sure that you vote. I'm going to remind you that we are in the middle of an election right now, frankly, because the vote by mails had dropped a few weeks ago. Our early voting will start on October 21st, and that will go until November 3rd. And then on November 4th, everybody takes the day off to get ready for the big day on November 5th. November 5th, everybody, and I mean everybody who's registered, is going to go and vote. We're going to have 100% votes this year. We're not going to be satisfied with 50 or 60%. Here in Florida, we have, in addition to a number of very credible candidates, we also have questions to change our Constitution. And a little bit of law or constitutional law for you. Here in Florida, we have changed our Constitution 144 times since it was first ratified back in 1968. And that wasn't the first Constitution for our state. We've actually had, I think, about five or six constitutions. One of them was back in the 1800s. There was a constitution right before the state of Florida seceded from the Union. There was another constitution when we returned to the Union after the Civil War. And as I said, in 1968, we went ahead and approved our current constitution, and 144 times we have amended it. We have six questions on the ballot this year. Four of those are relatively non-controversial. Two of them are very controversial. Amendment 3 is going to be a question on whether we're going to legalize marijuana for recreational purposes. And if it is passed by over 60% of our voters, then things will change here. It will be like Colorado and Washington. Republican Party of Florida and our governor are recommending voters not approve that. And Amendment 4, which is the amendment that would impact the abortion rights of women here in Florida, is also one that has certainly got a lot of controversy. These are the only two that were actually put on the ballot by the residents. The other four amendments, one of them having to do with whether we're going to have partisan races for a school board in the future, and whether we're going to have a constitutional right to hunt and fish, and whether we're going to allow the homestead exemption to start going up based upon inflation. Those were put on there by the legislature, and of course those are ones that the party is recommending that voters approve. That being said, we're going to get on with our guests for today. And our guest for today is Peggy Gossett Seidman. Peggy is originally a member of the Fourth Estate. She was a general. She was a journalist. She was a reporter, and she's a former Women's Tennis Association press director. And then, when she got involved in politics, she got involved in her town politics. She was on the commission for her town. And then got it in her head that she could do more for our state by moving up to the state legislature. And District 91, which covers Boca Raton and Highland Beach, is where she won her seat. just a little less than, well, I guess, I mean, about 2 years ago. She's took office a little bit less than 2 years ago. But Peggy, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Bob.
So, Peggy, you are, again, you come at this position from an interesting perspective. You were not a lifelong politician. You were a journalist. Tell me a little bit about that. What was your life like out there, watching and reporting?
Well, thank you for that question. It was very interesting when I was grappling with what to do with my life. I love sports. I loved writing. And I thought, let's combine it. I became the first sports writer for the Big Ten who was a girl. And then the Palm Beach Post actually hired me away when the economy wasn't so great in Michigan. And I was thoroughly enjoying covering sports in Florida. I've traveled the entire state. I covered the Tampa Bay Bucks, auto racing, spring training, and of course, tennis, not only auto racing, but a motorcycle, short track, drag racing, the whole shebang. Being from Detroit, it was the motor oil is in my blood. But it was great experience because I traveled the world actually then with women's tennis.
Oh, really?
And we had events in 20 countries, all four big events: U.S. Open, Wimbledon, the French, and Australian. And it gives you quite a good perspective on your home when you see other portions of the world. And so that gave me, I believe, a real good basis for coming back home, eventually having three kids, and learning more about our city, state, and country, having been elsewhere.
Well, that's really great. I mean, you know, it's interesting to have someone from the Fourth Estate go into politics, because you would normally think, especially down here in Florida, that the press tends to be left of center. But I guess with being in sports, that really didn't affect you as far as the reporting. It's either they got the score or they didn't get the score. They won or they didn't win.
Correct. It was much easier, did you win or not, situation. But actually, I did cover politics on election nights at the Post. We would put a ghost group of people on sports to just get the basic pages out, and the rest of them, we'd order 50 pizzas, and the rest of the sports guys and women had to come in and help cover politics.
So tell me about your pivoting out of being a member of for press and deciding to take a seat at the table at your town, is it a commission or council?
A commission, okay. Highland Beach Commission.
So when you went on to the commission there in Highland Beach, what led you to take that step?
Sure, thank you. Well, having three little kids, I continued doing PR and media consulting in the area for schools, for businesses. So I kept busy while being able to also be a stay at home and drive to, you know, five sports events a day mom. Uh-huh. And so during that time, Highland Beach clearly needed some help in terms of government.
Well, you know, and it's interesting. There's the common saying, all politics is all politics is local.
Right.
But you can't be any more local than your town commission, your city council.
That's right.
So I commend you for getting involved in it. As you know, I was on the city council in the city right below you, right below Highland Beach.
Yes.
And one of the things that I know that you grappled with as a town was fire protection. And you were, being a small town on the Atlantic, getting your services from one of your neighboring towns, Delray Beach, and that wasn't really working out to your satisfaction. Tell me a little bit about that.
Right. Thank you for that. It was interesting to see that we had one truck and one ambulance, and often they were out of town. And we would have reports when I was on the commission, like, oh, I called and we're still waiting. We're talking longer than normal standards. And so other people would say, well, I see your truck all the time in my neighborhood. And these were friends of mine in the town north of me. And my husband, being a physician, would say, the truck is always at the hospital with Delray residents. Mm. So when we heard from the residents enough times, we decided to undertake a study. I kept saying, we might need our own department.
Right.
And it turned out that we were overpaying believe the figure was close to $2 million a year in the last few years of the contract years, based on the services and the numbers of times that the truck was unavailable and a backup was not available. So once we launched that, it proved that in 3 to 5 years' time, the station would pay for itself.
Right.
Now, combine that with the influx of residents throughout Florida. This was, frankly, Highland Beach, and with Boca Raton nearby backing us up when possible now. The Highland Beach people and the commission which I served on were ahead of ahead of other cities, because now 13 cities in Broward are looking to start their own standalone fire and rescue station.
Okay.
But with the influx of residents before and after COVID especially, we don't have enough services throughout the state. It's not just our county,
right,
but other counties are looking at stepping up quickly to provide all services: fire, rescue, police, water, sewer. And this is due to the 450,000 new people a year.
Right.
So it worked out great for everyone. It took the pressure off of Delray Beach. We have a great working relationship. And so I still live there.
The chief of your fire department actually used to be a member of the Boca Raton.
Of course. I think that's why we have him. He's a terrific guy. He's really amazing. And it just serves the entire district well. It was, we had a good premonition with that. And I'm proud to have my name on the station on a plaque along with the commissioners and our former mayor and town manager who put this all together. So it's been a great, great win-win.
So after you had gotten your feet wet in local politics, you took a look at District 91, which was opened up because the member, I think he moved north. What happened
Yes.
in that?
Oh, sure. Mike Caruso had half of the seat before, the eastern half of the district.
Okay.
But during redistricting, with very bright ideas, the leadership decided to make Boca Raton one entire district and not split in two. It was essentially split between east and west,
right,
and making it one district and then carrying it all the way to 441, where my district reaches, was quite brilliant, because that put it together in a nutshell. You didn't have to have two commissioners coming in, two representatives coming in to speak to the council at Boca. And this worked well also for appropriations, because sometimes an appropriation would have to be split, like, oh, should we go to this member for that, or should we go to the west member?
Sure.
So it was a common sense move. And when I saw that, Mike Caruso said, listen, they're moving me north in terms of his, got all the way from South Palm Beach to Jupiter,
sure,
portions of Jupiter. You need to run, because you're so active in the city and the area. So I said, well, okay.
And for our listeners, what we do every 10 years, like I'm sure every other state and every other county, we do our reapportionment based upon the census. So sometimes
right,
they make some radical changes, and this was one of those years where they made a significant change, at least like you said. They combined the entire area of because Boca Raton, you know, it's funny. I used to live out west by 441, and we always had a post office address of Boca Raton.
Right.
And when I moved east and eventually ran for city council, a lot of my old neighbors out there in the west said, there's something wrong with my ballot. Your name isn't on it. I said, well, you don't live in the city of Boca Raton. He said, yes, I do. I said, no, you don't. And the city of Boca Raton actually goes as far west as Military. If you live here in the area, you'll know where I'm talking about. But the fact is that we allow our unincorporated areas to adopt the name of the city that's to the east of them for post office purposes. But that doesn't change the fact that they're unincorporated and they don't have a mayor and they don't have a city council. One of the things when I was on the county commission was that there is that split. There is that split at actually it's at the turnpike. And
right,
the turnpike is sort of the dividing line between unincorporated and incorporated. And District 4, which was where I was representing, was Highland Beach and Boca Raton. And District 5 is the unincorporated areas west of the turnpike. So it's interesting that for the state representative seat, they saw the logic in putting that all together, which is also
right,
similar to what they've done with the school board. School board goes completely from the Atlantic to the Everglades.
Right. It was a very good move. And certainly my mailing address is also Boca Raton, because those are the post offices serving us. And that's where people don't understand. They say, oh, I live in West Boca, but that's neither a municipality nor valid. But as you said, it's the post office location. But the people feel that they're part of Boca because they use Boca Raton services. They don't say, oh, I live in Southwest Palm Beach County.
Right.
But it's been a terrific a change that the legislature made. And I actually felt not only enabled, but rather dedicated to serving, because when I was at the Highland Beach Commission, we didn't have a grand staff like you did in Boca Raton, mm-hmm. and so many different divisions and your wonderful Parks and Rec in Boca Raton.
100,000 plus.
There you go. Right.
Highland Beach is a little smaller than that.
8,000. But because of that, the commissioners are very busy. We're the ones calling FDOT mm-hmm. and FWC right. and agencies and liaising with the state rep, Mike Caruso at the time, and Senator. And so I felt very empowered. I already knew some of the ropes. I've been to Tallahassee 8-9 times by the time I ran, and that was an asset.
And I'm sure, you know, with the Palm Beach County League of Cities, you get involved with, again, the state and the your other commissioners from the other municipalities all around this, the county.
So exactly.
It really gives you, it lets you know what's going on, as you're not just, concentrated just on the issues of Highland Beach.
Exactly. It gave me a good perspective, too, having served on League of Cities committees, that when certain votes came up at the State House, mm-hmm. I felt more engaged and perhaps more knowledgeable. For example, I voted down on the vacation rental bill. And that had leadership's backing. And I said, listen, no, this is not serving my district. And I voted down on it, even though it passed the House. The governor vetoed it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so we're not that fond of vacay rentals here, and well, certainly Boca Raton had a brilliant move when you were serving, I'm sure, put some guidelines and some statutes in place to assist with keeping Boca Raton and its hotels and its residents sort of away from that.
You and I, again, coming from local representation, me from Boca
right.
Raton and you from Highland Beach, we have a real... we embrace the idea of home rule.
Right.
And so that's one of the things that we always looked over at Tallahassee and said, hey, you know, we can do this better than you. Leave us alone. Let us make the regulations on land use. Let us make the regulations on things like vacation rentals. And why don't you stay focused on the things that are more at a high level?
Right, exactly. Every now and then, though, at the state, we have to step in. And I'll give you one example. I served on the JLAC committee, which is the judicial oversight for both private and public officials and businesses. Uh-huh. And there is one town just east of Tallahassee I won't name, but that town had a clerk, and the clerk was okay, didn't live in the district, but okay, it was a clerk. And the clerk then was elevated to assistant town manager. Uh-huh. Okay, so that hung in there. Salary something like doubled. I don't have the exact facts in front of me.
Right.
Then elevated to town manager.
Mm-hmm.
And then fired and elevated to consultant with a salary 5 times the original salary. Didn't even live in the area. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
So that particular situation, being a home rule, there was a town trying to govern itself,
sure.
but one person in 4 different roles with 4 different salary levels, elevating dramatically each time, we had to step in when the residents brought that case to the state,
mm-hmm.
and we weighed in and determined that the entire process was flawed, did not live up to their own constitution and statutes, and the person had to step away.
Mm.
So there's where every now and then we get a certain scenario that the state does have to weigh in. I think that we do the best. I can tell you everyone up there tries to do the best job they can.
Well, I'm sure they do.
Absolutely. I mean, there's not very many scurrilous members that I can't see. Everyone works very hard to do the right thing. And that's where, if you hear home rule is being worked again, sometimes not so well, and sometimes in this case and many others, we do need to step in.
So tell me your first impressions of being up there in Tallahassee, being a representative from South County. Do they give us the attention that you think we deserve?
I don't want to get in trouble, but I feel that Boca Raton didn't have always the right concept in Tallahassee.
Mm-hmm.
There was a feel that, oh, it's all the Boca Hotel and now the Boca Raton.
Right.
That people are well off. We don't need services, perhaps. We don't need a probes. there was a little bit of that pushback, and I was very clear taking photos and taking actually individual situations of my district. For example, there are street lights poles in the western part of my district without any lights ever set forth on them for 20 years.
Okay.
So there were canals that are overgrown with the weeds and trash that need to be cleared. I can't tell you the things we've pulled out of canals, refrigerators, paint buckets, probably all kinds cars. Of things, cars, lawn mowers, chemicals that have been thrown in, and the canals are not a trash dump, and we need appropriations for some of these needs. So my pitch was, yes, we have pockets of very beautiful vacation-y resort type of areas. We have our snowbirds, our beloved snowbirds who keep our economy healthy, but we also have pockets of hardworking singles, families, individuals who are barely making things, the monthly payments. And that is the message I took, that no, it's not all that way. So we have to make sure that we get our due amount of appropriations here.
And, you bring up appropriations, and that's one of the barometers we use for evaluating our representatives. What can they bring home to the
right.
district? And I know you're quite proud of the number of appropriations in your first term. As a freshman, we don't necessarily expect that you're going to be able to get as much as maybe a seasoned legislator.
Right,
I
right.
I think that you really brought a lot home. Tell me a few of the projects that you were comfortable with or that you were really proud of bringing home for our district.
Sure. Actually, it's my most proud moments are the water appropriations. Mm-hmm. I brought $3.2 million for Lake Worth Lagoon. That lagoon is north of the Boynton Inlet, and it is the original Lake Worth. It was originally a lake named for the same Lake Worth, named for the same Worth of Fort Worth, Texas. He was a general. That lagoon feeds Boca Raton. It feeds our canals, our intercoastal, and Lake Boca. If we keep that lagoon clean, Lake Boca will remain beautiful. You can see the bottom at 8-9 feet from a boat easily. We're out there quite often in our boat. And so the Lake Worth Lagoon was having some issues with clean water. So we are building islands, literally islands, starting with rocks, a sublayer of rocks, then a mix of fill, sand and rocks, and then sand and soil, and planting mangroves and seagrass and oyster beds to bring back the populations. I can tell you, I had never seen porpoise dolphin in the intercoastal in the first 15 years I'd been boating it. And almost every 4 or 5 times we go out, there are pods of dolphins playing in the Lake Worth Lagoon and the intercoastal. That's because we're bringing back the original status of it being a fish habitat, an oyster bed, which actually an oyster can clean something like 20,000 gallons of water in 2 days.
Wow.
And so why remove them?
Sure.
So I was proud to bring back that money. And
so
then
that was over $2 million.
$3 million in one, yes, in one term.
Wow.
2 years.
Now, I know you also were very helpful for the city of Boca Raton. They had a couple of appropriations, one for $1 million for some roadway widening over there on 4th Ave.
Yes, yes.
And then the drinking water transmission distribution got over $1 million.
Right,
so
right.
Even though, as you said, Boca Raton is perceived as this well-off community.
Right.
Obviously, we have needs, and we always are a donor city anyway.
That's it,
so
yeah.
So it's nice to see that you were able to convince your fellow legislators that this was something that was needed and that the governor didn't veto it.
Right, you're absolutely right. Well, he did veto one or two of mine. It's not like everything was perfect, but actually one was not in even our district. But for that drinking water, both Boca Raton, Highland Beach, and even county, it's a win-win because all of our drinking water is connected in the sense that if Boca Raton has an issue and may have to shut down some pipes, they rely on other areas to help serve them. But we're talking, some of these original Boca Raton neighborhoods had clay pipes.
I come from Boca.
Those break.
Weston, where they're hollowed out tree trunks.
I never knew that.
Oh, yeah. So
no way.
Places in downtown
Boston
that are hollowed out tree trunks.
So are you saying we should move and run there and fix those pipes and then come back?
Look, obviously,
wow, I did not know that.
We certainly have to upgrade our infrastructure.
Absolutely.
Down in Broward, they've had some real serious issues with pipes bursting and you know, the damage it does to the roads and
right.
And the disposition of people and not having water for periods of time.
Right.
Great to stay ahead of it.
Right.
I know Boca Raton is proud of its plant here. It
very
has
proud.
Its own
right.
Water purification, and they also handle the sewage there. And so
absolutely, Boca Raton does a great job. And sometimes when I'm traveling to another part of the state for meetings or to get up to Tallahassee, and I stop and have the water, I think, oh, what happened? Oh, I'm not in Boca anymore. So this is, yeah, we have to keep the water. Water is our identity, and it's our economy.
When I first got down here, someone told me the biggest factor in developing new areas for residential homes is water.
Yes.
It wasn't land. It wasn't other resources. It wasn't even traffic capacity.
Right.
It was water.
Absolutely. And there's another brilliant thing that Boca Raton did in its development process,
mm-hmm.
is put in a lot of parks.
Right.
Not only is that great for the beautification and the environment, I'm an environmental nut. I'll pick up trash no matter where I am off the sidewalk or streets, but no matter what, when you put in a park, it also helps safety and security.
Right.
And that is because a registered sex offender may not move in to that portion of the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
In terms of 1,000 feet, 2,000 feet, depending upon what state you're in.
Right.
And that is a great asset in order to keep track and keep our kids and our families safe along those parks. And also to Boca Raton saves so much waterfront parks.
And Boca's
brilliant.
Been very, very proud of the fact
totally.
That public beaches, unfortunately, in Highland Beach, we can't say the same
No,
thing.
We can't say, not yet, but I think they're getting there.
They're getting there.
Yeah, but it did a great job, and we're talking decades ago that the city members did a great job.
So one of the other things that you're able to do is support our nonprofits here, and I know
yes.
you were very capable in that regard. A lot of our nonprofits, HAP Center, Falk Center, JFS.
Yeah.
There's a long list of community partnerships that
yes.
you were able to help and be able to further their mission. I'm sure you're proud of that.
Very proud of that. I do have a very strong hold on socially keeping our people mentally stable and mm-hmm. mentally healthy. It's all in my family as well. My son is a psychiatrist for the VA, my husband and my daughter in medical. And it's just, it keeps it, again, we're talking about safety, security, and keeping people balanced. And so if we keep those services funded for the most needy, then we're able to maintain our excellent state of living here in the district. I do, however, owe the Falk Center a basketball game.
Oh, okay.
And the HAB Center.
Now you'll tell them that
both Falk and HAB. Yes, I promise both of them a basketball game, and that I come out and shoot around when it gets a little cooler for some of the people who visit or work there.
So one of the one of the things that we're known for. Well, we're known for two things. We're known for Hanging Chads.
Yes.
That's from years ago. And we are known for Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes.
And so I know that you were instrumental in opening up the records from the grand jury case. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes. Boy, that was a whopper. I followed that case. Two very good friends of mine actually covered the case. And my kids were little when this was going on. But like anyone in Palm Beach County, if they read the Palm Beach Post, we were following that.
Right.
Following the sneaking up these little girls out the back staircase, digging through the garbage by the police. It was an amazing case. And so when I had the opportunity with our clerk, Joe Abruzzo, to run that, I said gladly.
Uh-huh.
Because I lived it. I mean, my kids are playing sports in the neighborhoods where he was picking up 12-year-olds and 14-year-olds.
Yeah, well, it wasn't one of the brighter pieces of our history.
No.
But to open up those cases and let people know exactly what was going on, I think was long
overdue. I was honored. And because of, again, living here and living here throughout this time, I was able to speak from the heart about it. Got a standing ovation. I was very, very proud of that. I researched it for 100 hours, probably, watched the shows, researched online, spoke to people who were involved, and I'm very proud that we were able to get that done. That enabled us to recover from any kind of questions like, oh, Florida's a little skeevy, they let him go. I think we recovered greatly by opening those files and with in terms of honesty and transparency.
I'm hearing rumors that we may have a special session. What's your thoughts on that? You think that they're going to call you back up to Tallahassee to deal with the condo problem that we're having now?
I thought I've heard yes, we're going to do it. Then I heard maybe not. Now maybe again, because depending on how the outfall is in the next few weeks, But everyone is very keen on it. Rep Caruso and I and Chip LaMarca, Vicky Lopez in Miami Beach, we've talked very strongly in last session about creating a condo caucus.
Right.
And that would put us out there and put up an immediate location, maybe a joint website where we can take people's questions and concerns. I get sometimes 300 questions a day about, you know, the condos and what do we do in recertification. I do know the governor and leadership is committed to extending some of the timelines for acquiring funds and making the renovations that sometimes you run a bill and you have to tweak it.
Right.
Not everything's perfect. So
down here, and I'm sure people who are listening to this from wherever you are in the country or the world, we had a condominium actually collapse a few years ago. There were many people killed in that unfortunate situation, and our legislative representatives saw the need to make sure that the condominiums, which, you know, a lot of them are 40 and 50 years old, are on the water, and it was one of the problems with condominiums is they're run by, you know, residents, and they don't want to upset their fellow residents.
Right.
And so they're not necessarily going to get the money that's necessary to upgrade or at least bring the building back up to safety. And so
right.
The legislature had to step in, but now all of a sudden special assessments are, you know, to the tune of $50,000 or $100,000, which is creating a problem for some of the people living there.
So. Right, especially those on fixed incomes or those not understanding. You can't just buy the condo and then live there forever without engaging in repairs and maintenance, R&M. And certainly there's very few bad actors. I'm sure everyone tried to do the right thing, but things sneak up on you. If you mix cement, rebar, and water, you've got an issue building. And in the district, actually, there were a couple buildings who had the very similar scenario to Surfside with that in their parking garages.
Really?
Yes. And so they got on it and they realized that that is an issue. But there are others that even if some of the older ones were built so terrifically that they're in good standing now, we need to give people a grace period and not have people panicking.
And I think that's what, if the special session is called, they'll hopefully
yes.
deal with that so that there's not so much compression as far as the timeline.
Right.
And people can get these things done.
And to add, if there's not a special session, I know it'll be top of the list January 8th
okay.
When we start talking. So I know it for a fact.
And people, again, who don't know much about Florida politics, we have one session of our legislative leaders getting together each year. It's a 60-day session, a regular session, normally in March, but what we do is we move it earlier on even years because our representatives have to go out and campaign to, you know, either get their seat back or a new person is looking for that seat if it's an open seat. And so you know, it's interesting to watch, and committees start meeting right after the new year.
Right, right. We look forward to it, although I had to buy a winter wardrobe again, having been out of Michigan for so many years.
Yeah,
it does get chilly up there. Right. But it's a great little town, and people really do try hard, as I said, to do the right thing. And that's why if I could add that I try to run bills that make sense, that it's common sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think, what would all my carpool moms think? What would my friends think? What would the whole district think? You have to think that way. I don't vote for me. I don't vote for my personal opinion. I vote for the district. And I take time to get opinions gathered, talk to leaders, religious leaders, community leaders. The council in Boca is wonderful. And of course, Maria Sachs being our county commissioner, currently I give her a ring, but we work together to get things done. And I actually never had a no vote on the floor, never. Well, not in the Senate or the House.
I'm sure it's coming, so yeah.
No, I'm gonna keep it going. I mean, even Bobby Powell said, you gotta come over for your bill, and Gail Harrell. So I go to the Senate when my bills are presented in the Senate, and sure. I sit there and see them through. And it's been a terrific experience to have that jumping on to from both chambers to my bills in support, because it shows that I was trying to do the right thing and then did the right thing.
And look, this is why we have a representative government. This is why we send you up there. And this is also why we have term limits, to give people an opportunity to represent us and then to go home.
Right.
And so that we don't have career politicians up there like we do in Congress. And
there's
an opportunity for someone else to step behind you when you term out.
Right.
And hopefully you'll be there for a while.
Right. Well, thank you for that.
I thank you so much for coming in today. I see by the clock that we have run our half hour and then some. And so I wish you well. I thank you very much for coming in. I know you're running for re-election right now. If anybody wants to learn a little bit about your platform, how would they learn about that?
Sure. They can certainly go on my website, peggyforflorida.com. They can call my office. I think everyone, including everyone, has my cell number. It's been passed around a lot. I answer my phone as much as I can, and I have a great staff if I'm tied up, as I am right now.
Yeah, that's great.
So I'm happy to clean the canals and get the water running clear, and it just do the right things.
All right. Well, again, thank you very much for making time to come on in today, and I hope that you, as our listeners, learned a little bit more about Florida politics and about the wonderful people who put themselves out there to get elected and to go out and represent us as well as they can, and hopefully make sure that we're protecting ourselves from ourselves. Okay, well, we'll see you our next episode. Have a great day.
Thank you, Mayor.